What's up, Gator Nation?
Good morning, Gator Nation.
You're listening to Gator Nation.
As the Gators have the biggest lead of the day.
You're listening to Morning Edition on WUMT.
From the University of Florida's College of Journalism and Communication.
3, 2, 1, we're live.
Hi, everyone. This is The Communicator, the University of Florida College of Journalism and Communications podcast, where we dive into the latest in media, picking the brains of top faculty and staff around the Gator Nation. I'm Matthew Abramson, Director of Media Services, with Jake Cuomo.
Hello, hello.
And Kaylee Pichardo.
Hey.
Today, we're speaking with Juan Chen, Associate Professor and Chair in the Department of Advertising. Thank you for joining us, Juan.
Thank you so much, Matt. And so nice being here.
Yeah, it's great to see you. Mm-hmm. So, to start off with, you initially earned your bachelor's and master's degrees from Wuhan University. What drew you to the fields of advertising and communications initially?
Okay, that's a very good question. So,
thank you.
Like my parents.
These two wrote it.
Yeah, like my parents, they were journalists. So they always encouraged me to pursue a career in journalism or in communication. So back in China, I think the system was very different, not like here. So like, which means before you even, you know, took the exam, like we have like standardized national exam, and you had to choose your university and the major. And at that time, I chose Wuhan University because it's one of the prestigious like UF, and also they have the top journalism and communication, you know, program. So I really, really want to go there. But the things like they are kind of allotted different majors in different locations. And that time, advertising is the major, you know, was available to me. So I think close enough. So I chose advertising. But after I got admitted, I really love it.
So did your parents' journalism career impact you and your decision making?
Yes, exactly. Yeah. So like my dad and my mom, they have been working in the journalism for like 30 years, more than 30 years. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And they really want, you know, their daughter kind of that family tradition, you know, follow their career path, you know. Yeah.
Excellent. After graduating, you worked as an assistant professor at Ocean University of China. What motivated you to stay in the academic environment versus going out in the industry?
Mm-hmm. I actually like work as a marketing specialist in a marketing, you know, yeah, the company for like 2 years, you know, yeah, while I was studying for my master's degree. Mm. And then, you know, I went to the university. I really, really love teaching and doing research. And I love inspiring those young people to chase their dreams, you know, their aspiration, how to reach that, you know. So that make me feel very fulfilling. You know, so that's the moment I know this is the career I really want to, you know, spend my life on.
Well, you were going in thinking about advertising and then research stole your attention. What is it about doing research that got you excited?
I think like I like discovering new things, you know, I like to build knowledge, you know, kind of exciting people so they don't know about this and you educate them, inspire them and let them know, right? So yeah, that's the part that I kind of constantly want to do research. I remember like this semester, I'm teaching the qualitative research and one student actually approached me after one class. He actually asked me, so like, have you ever like lost your passion or interest doing research? You know, I actually, you know, stopped a little bit. So I kind of, you know, give it a thought, right? And I said, nope. I never, you know, yeah, lost that, you know, passion. Even like I've been there for 20 years, because there's so many new phenomena, new things for us to look at, you know, to explore. Yeah.
This is Jake asking the next question. You earned another master's degree in advertising, this time at the University of Florida, CJC. Why did you choose UF? And how does learning about advertising at Wuhan compare to the States?
That's a very good question as well. My first master's degree was actually communication. Yeah, not like specifically advertising. As I told you, I actually, you know, taught 2 years at the Ocean University of China and in advertising. So at that time, I did think I want to further my expertise, you know, in advertising. So that's why I think I, you know, a second master of advertising would be helpful. But the question like whether I should stay, right, in China or go abroad, right? Definitely UIF, you know, is the one of the best university in the world and had the best, you know, program in advertising, right?
The whole world knows it.
And also, like, you know, I read a lot of the, you know, advertising related, books in China, and they imported from US. So I said, why not go there? You know, so that's kind of, you know, motivated me to come here to pursue second master's degree in advertising.
Mm-hmm. And was the experience different, similar? How did that?
Yeah, I think it's a little bit different. So in China, I think the advertising is like more theory driven. But here, I think that it was a perfect balance between theory and the practice, the application part. I think that kind of enriching experience for me to better, you know, serve the students. So, yeah, love it. Mm-hmm.
So, hey, this is Kaylee. So you left UF, but you stayed in the States in the SEC, and you completed your PhD in advertising in Tennessee, the University of Tennessee, Knoxville. So how was it up there in the Rocky Top? And what was the focus of your PhD research?
Yes. So first, when I chose my PhD, I want to, you know, stay in the south part of the country. I love warm weather and also, the good program, right? Definitely. And then I chose Tennessee because they, you know, offer me the scholarship and the highest, you know.
Touching.
So that's why, I went. Oh, definitely, like, good reputation as well, right? I had a wonderful time there. Amazing faculty members, mentors, and, you know, very supportive cohort as well. So, wonderful 3 years there. And the time, you know, at that time, at the beginning of the 2000, you know, it's kind of a social media, you know, started getting popular, you know, obtain the attractions, you know. So that's why, as I said, I always like to explore those new emerging phenomena, right? So that's why at that time, my research was focusing on social media and the non-traditional type of advertising, such as product placement.
Mm-hmm. What was, like, some mentor that you, like, really inspired, like, were really inspired by there?
And that could be in Gainesville. Doesn't yeah, that's it. Yeah, based, like, in the Tennessee area.
Any, like, mentors that you've had in, like, in your past that, like, kept you going?
Yeah, let me tell you, like, you know, yeah, I think I told my, you know, graduates, all undergraduates, story, because, like, the training, the education I received here, like, I mean, methodologically, right, it's like more quantitative, like number driven, you know. And when I went to the Tennessee, they actually, like, structured the course differently. So the first semester is still like a number that is, you know, quantitative oriented, but the second semester, you know, my first year as a PhD, we had a course kind of combine qualitative research, you know, theory and the method. That was the moment I know, okay, this is what I love for, you know. Everything we have, you know, we have to read a lot of articles, you know, so hard to understand, but I just want to read them. I just have that passion. I think part of the reason is my, you know, PhD mentor, you know, Dr. Haley. He was teaching the course. You know, he was the one that hooked me with that theory, with that methodology. And I really admired him, you know. Yeah, he's such a wonderful, wonderful teacher. At that time, I told myself, you know, in the future, I really, really want to be him. Mm-hmm.
Shout out Dr. Haley.
Shout out.
All right, so having studied advertising for so long, what traits do you think are necessary for working in research? And what would you tell a student who's uncertain about getting into a doctoral? Imagine I'm waffling on the topic. Should I do a doctoral degree? And what is, like, the trait that makes you perfect for that field?
I think, like, first of all, I already talked about it, right? Passion is very, very important. Curiosity, right? And also love to learn. Because I do think learning is a lifelong, you know. Even now, I'm still learning new things every day, you know. So, but if you, like, if at this stage, right, if Matt asks me, you know, whether I should, you know, do the PhD or not, right? I don't know. I think, like, most important thing is that listen to your heart. If that voice inside me is so strong, right, that motivation is from the within, that's a very strong signal to tell you you're ready. But in addition to that, practically, right, you have to think about, right, you have spent 4 years right? You have enough resource and the financial resources, right? Even you can get tuition waiver, right? But you still think whether or not at that moment, at that stage, it's the best choice for you.
Mm-hmm. Oh my God, you sound just like my mother.
Oh, really?
Yeah, no. Yeah, she's like, whatever drives you, go for it. As long as you like have that passion, keep on going. But yeah.
That's the best kind of advice you could give anybody, honestly.
All right, shout out to Kaylee's mom. So you worked as visiting assistant professor at Indiana University Southeast, followed by assistant professor at Penn State University. What were some of the highlights of your teaching and research during that time?
So the Indiana Southeast University is my first academic job here in the United States. I think that was a very precious time to inform me how to be a good or great, you know, U.S. professors. Because, right, they're different, right? They're different. And also, I think because that's kind of a smaller, much smaller university, not like the UF. And also, the students kind of are also different from here. We have a lot of the untraditional, mature learners there. So that helped me to adapt my teaching to a different levels, different, you know, experience of the students. I think that's a very helpful, you know. So that I spent one wonderful year there. And then for the Penn State, again, I taught in the branch campus, not at their main, you know, yeah, University Park. I think the highlight there was I had opportunity to mentor undergraduate students like you doing research, okay? That's fascinating. You just, you know, taught them, you know, how to conduct the research step by step and guide them and to see, you know, the passion, the interest from them, right? That's so, yeah, so rewarding. I really, really enjoy that, you know.
As faculty members, that kind of feeds us too.
Yeah.
Like, Kaylee, you and Jake both have enthusiasm that I feed on every single time that we do something.
Yeah, thank you.
I was going to ask you, like, so you've worked with undergrads. Have you worked with like students in going to their masters or doctorates? Like, how is that different between the two? Because one is like they're just learning and the other ones, they've been in it. So how does that differ?
Yeah, I have been many, many, many students, different levels. Undergraduate, you know, master, PhD. I think like they have the similarities and differences, right? So for all the students, they involved in your research, at least, as I said, they have kind of interest, right? Passion, enthusiasm to explore something new, something different, discovering something, some insights there, right? So that's the same thing. I think differently is like the undergraduates, they are kind of have more innovative ideas, you know? They kind of are more bold to mention some, you know, very, very, you know, yeah, different untraditional ideas. That's I really, really like working with undergraduate students. I think for graduate students, they are kind of more mature in terms of the methodology, you know, yeah. So they kind of receive the systematic training in how to do research, right? So they could generate a more rigorous, you know, data analysis, you know, results from that perspective. Mm-hmm.
So in 2015, you returned to Gainesville as assistant professor. Woohoo! What drove you to return to the CJC?
I would like to say, once a gator, always a gator. Yes. For me, like personally, I think I always wanted to work in a research institution. So my previous, you know, institution, I'm more teaching oriented. So yeah, you can see like I really have passion for research, right? So that's one thing drew me here. And also I like to work in an environment very supportive and collegial. And the culture here is just, you know, right for me, right? And also I like the warm weather, beautiful campus, you know, sunshine.
We've got warmth in spades. So UF is an R1 university. Can you kind of just tell us like how important research is in this campus? I mean, all R1s, but like how central it is to what happens here?
Yeah, I think it's very, very important, you know, for the R1 research, because that's kind of how you build your reputation, you know, right? You want the other university to look at you in terms of the innovation, right? Of the new knowledge, right? The theory you can generate, right? You want them, because we're not just R1, we're the top our one, mm-hmm. right? So that's the huge difference. We want others to look at us. When they do some research, they can always find the best scholars here, right? If they want to do some AI research, okay, let's go find them in Florida. They want to do some communication research, right? We have the top-notch researchers here, right, for them to collaborate with. So that's why the UF is highly, you know, yeah, encouraged. And fortunately, we have a wonderful scholars, researchers here, you know, to build that solid foundation for research.
Humble brag. So over the next few years, you became associate professor and took on the role of chair of the Department of Advertising. How's your position evolved? And what does the day-to-day look like with that?
I think like personally, I'm kind of like a person always try to challenge myself. Right, you think about go to a different country to study, you know, you never know how hard it is, right? And I want to do more. So if this is, you know, the goal, the standard, I try to be there. No matter like assistant professor, associate professor, or even the chair. Because I think that's kind of the gene in my blood. And also the reason I really, you know, like to do the chair is like I do think this Gator Nation, this college, right, this department nurtured me, you know, for me to become me. Why? So that it's time for me to give back, to support the other, you know, yeah, faculty, students, staff, for them to be successful, for them to be thrive, you know. So that's, you know, the motivation for me to do this job.
So what does an advertising chair do? What are some of the responsibilities?
Yeah, kind of like, you know, the manager of that department, right? You have to make sure like your faculty members, they are doing a great job, you know, educating our, you know, wonderful students, right? Doing the awesome, you know, research. And also like you have to think about like, you know, what's the best curriculum to best prepare our students, right? To for them to be successful.
And that's an evolving story. It's not the same thing that was on the course level.
Always, always. So that's why we have to, you know, yeah, always kind of keep eye on what's going on there, you know, in the industry, and then make sure we have that connection. We are aware, prepare our students to the job market, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So like with like everything like always evolving and like always changing, how do you select the topics of your research? How do you like keep on going and like conducting that work with like trying to navigate through the evolving world?
That's a very good question as well. So as I said, what makes me so excited about research is like we can always explore different new phenomena, right? Things there. But at the same time, as a scholar, as a researcher, we also build some foundational, you know, core knowledge or theory we could apply to a variety of the phenomena. Right. So that's why, you know, those are the things when we look at, you know, we look at a lot of the new phenomena, we still have that course, the foundation, still have that theory, right, behind that to support us to look for those very interesting, right, phenomena. And it's our job to find out what the rule, right, the law behind those new evolving, you know, world or, you know, yeah, the phenomena there. So that's kind of how I, you know, choose the topics, you know, although there's different topics, right? So I still have something to, you know, yeah, look for.
So okay, yeah.
We need to go further into the curtain, behind the curtain. What is the phenomena that you are most inspired when you see it to ask that next question?
Yeah, like what like interests you so much and like how do you keep digging?
Yeah, yeah. So for example,
you base it around like a typical couple.
I can give you like very, you know, a specific example. For example, like my PhD, right? Mm-hmm. You have to do the dissertation, right, for you to be able to graduate. So back then, as I said, that social media, you know, very popular, right? Started getting popular. And I don't know if you know about like a social game. So like the games you play through the social media platform. Uh-huh. And back then also just started, okay? And then I've heard of it and I noticed, okay, through the games, I noticed there are some brands in the social game, right? So interest, I'm just keep, you know, yeah, kept thinking, then how consumers feel about it, right? How they respond to this kind of brand, right? In that social game environment. Right. So that's the moment that triggered me to explore that. And that, you know, finally became my dissertation.
And what insight did you find in that instance?
I found like, you know, people kind of, because like a simulated world, right, at that time, they kind of equal the reality to that world. So they kind of will get used to see so many brands, right? We're bombarded by the brands, you know? So it's very normal to see brands in that simulated world. And more interesting is that they feel like they give them a sense of realism. Mm-hmm. So which means they expected to see the brand in that world. If there's no brand, no advertising, they feel it's not real. So it's not normal. It's a kind of, you know, miss a connection between the real world and the game world. You know? So that's very interesting.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so sticking with some of your research, some of it is focused on sponsored social media influencers, my dream job. what is the most impactful insight you found in regards to the effects they have on their audiences?
Yes, I have been doing like several projects on social influencer. Okay, social media influencers. I think the key factors or insights I and my collaborators uncovered is like authenticity. You may have heard that, right? And transparency and relationship. So those are the key words to make sure you kind of build that relationship, right, with your consumers, because that's the foundation, right? The fan is the foundation for them to be successful. But also a kind of interesting aspect is that, again, like people, I don't know, people even think they kind of get used to this kind of a commercial purpose of the influencers, because they want them to be successful. They want them to be sustaining their career. So in that sense, they said, yeah, right? So it's okay. We want you to be successful. Don't want you to be gone, right? So then we understand you're going to sponsor some, you know, brands or products.
Yeah, like they still want them to be human, but they understand it's a job. Yeah.
So different than like when I was growing up and we didn't want bands to sell out.
Yeah.
And be too corporate.
No, people still do that. Yeah, but yeah.
Now you kind of look at it and you're like, well, that's feeding their families and keeping their lights on. So.
I'm Glenn Richards from WUFT Amplified. If you're like me, you appreciate how special the local music scene is here in North Central Florida, featuring indie rock, hip-hop, bluegrass, and so much more. WUFT Amplified is Florida's music series, filmed right here in Weimar Hall. This show rocks, guys, seriously. And you might not realize that WUFT Amplified is produced entirely by UFCJC staff and students. To watch past episodes and discover your new favorite bands, check out WUFT.org/amplified.
So, in your opinion, can we turn ASMR into advertising?
Oh, ASMR. Can someone define ASMR for us?
Audio stimulation. I don't know what that means.
SMR.
ASMR.
It's
ASMR.
Audio stimulation.
Music.
Autonomous sensory meridian response.
What?
Because that's actually from psychology, mm-hmm. That term, you know, yeah. And again, this is this project I collaborated with PhD back then, and she brought this to me, okay, and said that we should do some research on this because it's so, you know, popular and interesting, because she personally, she used that to help her sleep or relax,
oh,
you know, to release the stress. And then we did some research. I think, yes, we can. However, you have to be very thoughtful to think about, because based on our research, this type of the, you know, advertising is more acceptable by younger, you know, generation or audience. And also you have to be mindful about what type of product or brand. Right, some of the brand may more, you know, appropriate to use this, right, and also the media channel. I think more personal channel rather than the mass media would be more appropriate. Yeah. And then finally, female soft voice.
Mm. You're so
that's
right.
That's the key. Wow.
There goes my shot.
Yeah. Oh, it looks like we're out of a job.
Yeah.
No, because I love ASMR. In the sense that, like, it's so calming, but I have friends that hate it.
I'm one of those guys who can't listen to it.
It's just like, it's like the mouse noises. They hate it. But, when you're like talking about their specific brands are needed, that, like, I've definitely seen multiple like soda pop cans or like opening the soda and like the fizziness and like advertisers just look, using look, that. Look, yeah, look. Literally.
Pepsi ads in the front of
like, yeah, you know, yeah. Oh my God. Especially like right before a movie and they're like trying to advertise, oh, go get your popcorn, go get your thing.
That like sip and then.
Yes, literally that. Exactly that.
But as Juan was saying, this is still built on transparency, authenticity, so it can't be forced, even if it are those.
I mean, it's not, because especially like in a movie theater environment, that's the only noises you hear in the crowd in the theater. So yeah,
ideally.
Yeah. So yeah, that's so cool.
Going back to social media keeps changing relatively quickly, and but what constants are there in advertising that don't change regardless of platform or time?
Very good question. Again, I think no matter what format, right, what kind of platform, the key for me, I think, is the connection between the platform and the consumer's audience and how you forced that relationship and finally how to add value to the consumers. Because advertising is about, you know, make people resonate with you, right? No matter what kind of message, no, what kind of media platforms, right? That's the key. And you have to add value to the consumers. Mm-hmm. No matter it's informational, right? Entertaining, you have to, right? So that's how you kind of, no matter what format, how change, you know, how the social media evolve, that's the key.
Connections are everything.
So like just keeping it human, like just keeping the empathy, keeping the resource.
Yeah. But if they want information, for example, right? They just want information. You can do the hard sale, right?
Oh, yeah.
So at this moment, I just want the information, yeah, right? You still add value to them. I think that's the key. Mm-hmm.
So what would you say are the biggest challenges and benefits advertising industry sees with the advent of artificial intelligence?
What's the benefit of AI? And like,
I know. I think it's right now, again, like, you know, 10 years, right? Mm-hmm. 15 years, we're talking about social media. So now everybody's talking about AI, right?
Yeah.
First of all, AI is very broad. And also, I think, again, let's go back to my point. The AI is keep changing, right?
Yeah.
Our relationship to AI also has been evolved with the period of time.
Yeah, people are more accepting of it now.
Exactly. You know, at the beginning, everybody like freak out. What it is, okay, we want to lose our job, right? How can we? I think the key is like at this stage, okay, everybody needs to have a basic AI literacy, right? You know what it is, right? It has such a broad terms, right? And then I think for the agency specifically, based on your goals, based on your position, based on your characteristics, what kind of job you're doing, how to make yourself unique before the AI, right? And then how you can use AI to amplify that. So I think that's the question every, you know, agency should ask themselves, you know, yeah. Not just freak out or not just, you know, if they actually embrace it, find a balance, the appropriate point. That's the key, you know.
Mm-hmm. So I've seen you at the AI summit. I know that you lean into artificial intelligence.
Yeah, yeah.
Mm-hmm. As you see it, what are some of those opportunities on how we, whether it's researching or as practitioners, can utilize artificial intelligence to enhance what we're doing?
Yeah, exactly. I think if you like from advertising specifically, right, definitely it can enhance the creativity. Mm-hmm. So, right, it can help us do something we cannot do, or you can spend a lot of time, right, effort to do that. That's one part. And also personalization, right? So they can know who you are and give you the, you know, the advertising, right? Mm-hmm. Tailored to you. So that's another, you know, benefit. And also I think, as I said, that because we are changing, the relationship is changing, I think in the past we consider AI as a tool, right? People only think of AI as a tool, but I think we should more consider AI as a collaborator.
A partner.
Yeah, a partner, collaborator, right? So then think about how you work with that partner, right? Collaborator. To achieve your goals, right? At the end of the, we still need to achieve our goals, right? No matter study or work, right? Or life, right? So I think, you know, yeah. So that's the current, my thoughts on the relation between human beings and AI.
I think that's an interesting way to put in it. I'm just, because I'm thinking about my dad. He cannot live without Siri. Every time I'm with him, he's like, Siri, call Jake or whatever. Write a reminder or something. But it's something that's always been there. But now it's more I guess obvious is the word to put it.
Yeah, collaborator, assistant.
Yeah, you know? I think, yeah, like with like Siri and like Alexa, I feel like because you've like had them for so long and like most people don't even like think that they're AI. Like most people just give them their own personality. And it's like really, it's funny to see how it changed once we got like ChatGPT and like we didn't give them a name like Siri or Alexa. So yeah, it's just, it's so funny how much we just want AI to be human, to like be able to say, I'm going to be a collaborator with you. Like I'm going to like give you a personality. Mm-hmm. Even though AI themselves, like they grow their personality as you like continue to use them.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Like a chia pet.
Yeah. Just keep growing as long as you water them.
Exactly. Yeah. You have to foster it properly. So Juan, you've also produced a prolific amount of refereed journal articles and book chapters. Do any stand out as personal favorites, pride points? Tell us about them.
Yeah. I don't pick favorite. I think all of, I love all of them, you know, all of my research pieces. I love them all because I consider they are, you know, my academic children. Yeah. But I think.
So let's meet the family.
But like three did stand out for me. The first one is like the product placement in social game. Mm-hmm. I just talked about, yeah. Right? That one was come out from my dissertation and published in the top journal, Journal of Advertising. Why it's special is not just that, because it took me 3 years, 4 rounds of revisions for that piece finally to be published. So, you know, so yeah, that's very, very special to me. The second one was the research I did on Instagram advertising. The reason I love it, because that's one of the earlier, you know, study focused on Instagram, you know, advertising. At that time, very, very few studies research on that, you know. So that that piece also was the most read. No, yeah,
like trailblazer and most read.
16,000 I checked you know, this morning. I'm very proud of that. You know, so yeah. That's that.
What did that focus on?
It's focused on like again from the consumers, you know, mm-hmm. perspective. Mm-hmm. It's like a very new, you know how they perceive, you know, yeah, Instagram. And at that time, you know, before that is a Twitter, right? Twitter is like more text based, you know, yeah. But at that time, you know, Instagram is more picture, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah,
based, so different. So you know, people kind of have a different perception.
I feel like
that.
People also use Instagram just a lot more.
Yeah,
like I know for me, the advertising on Instagram is always so specific now. Like it's, I talk about something and then it's just right there. And I know like a lot of people like start thinking like, oh, your phone's listening in and everything. But yeah. Okay. Go on.
It's the algorithm.
It is algorithm.
You know, they know you even better than you. So, yeah. You know, yeah. So, yeah. So that's the second piece. I'm, you know, love it. I'm proud of that. And the third one published like 2 years ago about AI, you know, in marketing communication. Again, the reason is that, again, it's like one of the first studies focused on that. And also we won an award, you know, yeah, of that as well. Mm-hmm. Those are the three.
Amazing.
It's like a long labor, just always like so proud. And then like the most recent.
Does it say anything if I never bought anything off social media? None of the advertising's ever actually worked.
Really? Oh, they work for me so well. Like,
does that say more about me than the advertising?
Yes, I think you need to use your phone a lot more.
I don't know, because I'm the same way. I'm on Instagram quite a bit, but I've never like clicked on an ad like purposefully to.
Really?
Yeah, it's.
Well, we have the expert here. What do you think?
Yes.
I think like you should consider like advertising, right? First of all, in different ways, how you consider effective, right? I mean, for you guys, we actually have like theory. I'm gonna talk about theory.
No, you can go on.
Mere exposure theory. Mm-hmm. So which means even you don't click it, okay, even you don't pay attention to it, if you know, see that again, it actually, you know, plays some effect in your mind. So you people will more like the things they're familiar with, exposed often with. So you may realize that, you know, but that's part of the, you know, effect. Direct effect, click that, indirect effect.
Yes, literally.
In your mind.
No, I think also for me, it's like I have everything connected to like my email.
Mm-hmm.
So like everything that I like even search up a little bit, I find it again and I'm like, damn it, I really just want to click on it now and like get it now. And I think, yeah, it's definitely personality. But yeah, I feel like I've, even like the shirt I'm wearing, the reason why I like this shirt so much is because I keep seeing so much in like social media about like wolves and like just like animal print and everything. So even that, like just social media in general, always just impact people's likes.
Yeah. But again, we have to do ethical, right? We
yes,
do advertising.
Yes.
We have to, you know, do advertising ethically. So, you know, think about the degree. And endeavor was still like the balance of degree, right? On the one side, we have to be personalized, right? To tailor to you. But the other, you know, part of how personal, right? The degree. Don't freaking people out, right?
Oh, yeah. Oh,
feel
yeah.
like it's stalking on you.
Yeah, yeah.
Right?
It's like walking on a tightrope. Mm-hmm.
Yes, exactly.
I like, you know? I invite it in. Like, if I don't want to see anything anymore, like, I always click, oh, I see it too much. It's too repetitive. Mm-hmm. It's not relevant. But I think that's why it feels so catered to me because I have, like, interacted with the system and I have interacted with the AI and the algorithm so much. Like, I feel like you guys just need to interact more.
See, that freaks me out.
That's an interesting point, and that's something that I do too, is I give it feedback and I say less, more, block, not interested in this. It reminds me of how before streaming music, we curated our own audio libraries. Yes. Mm-hmm. CD, like,
oh, I literally was burning a CD yesterday.
You know, compared to basically letting the algorithm do all of the work and feed us content, where we're passive in that choosing model. Do you think that spills into advertising too, when you just sort of like go with whatever is being fed to you as far as through the algorithms?
I think like right now, sorry, even like we are talking about this, right? We're already aware of that. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of everybody aware of that, right? So then how, excuse me, how acceptable, what is the line right there? What's the boundary? I think it depends on the consumers, right?
Yeah. It definitely does.
As consumers, you set a comfortable line there, right? So, yeah. But I think good things like everybody right now have that kind of literacy. We all know algorithm is kind of, you know, do a lot of job, right? To feed us, to, you know, yeah, make the connection, right, with us. You know, but as again, right, what is the, you know, the best way?
Yeah.
Sign me up for a PhD on self-awareness, metacognition of algorithms.
Literally.
And choices in advertising.
Oh, I can talk on and on about algorithms. I love them so much.
So Juan, pivoting back to your current role, what courses are you teaching right now? Where can students actually get to spend time with you?
Wonderful. So like every fall semester, I'm teaching an undergraduate course, Digital Insights. So basically we, you know, yeah, conduct research and find data and generate insights. Okay. So that's the one. And in the spring, I'm teaching the qualitative research, but that's for graduate students. So. Mm-hmm.
And then independent studies, anywhere, other contexts that students can get involved?
I always have a lot of the research projects going on. So every semester I have I'm doing a lot of the, you know, research projects. More frequently I involved with the graduate study, you know, graduate students, like, you know, master, PhD. But as I said, I always welcome the undergraduate approach to me, you know, to see, oh, Dr. Chen, what kind of project you're doing right now? Can I, you know, just be proactive. I think all the faculty members, especially the research faculty members, love to doing research and they love to involve students because it's a very rewarding experience. So I, as I said, I have been working with like four master students in the past 2 years, and all of them apply for our PhD program. And the three were admitted.
Nice.
That's, you know, the rewarding part, you know. So that's, I just love working with students, you know.
Can you tease what you have going to the horizon research wise what's next?
So currently, you know, I'm actually trying to collaborate with a PhD professor from computer science. You know, what are we trying to do is, like, you know, so many influence marketing, right? And we already talked about the algorithm. I will also talk about sometimes, especially for younger audience, some they don't know, some of the content might be a little bit manipulative, right? Mm-hmm. Especially with the algorithm, right? To help you. So we try to kind of identify those, you know, content and better help the younger audience generation to understand this kind of strategy tactics from influencer marketer. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Fascinating.
Are you like open to like any students outside of the CJC to come and like just talk, pick your brain about like AI and social media and algorithms and all that we've been talking about today?
All the time.
Yes.
Yes. I just love to, you know, talking to students, interact with them, you know. Yeah. That's the most rewarding part of my job. And I constantly do that, you know, yeah, more than 20 years.
What are the biggest takeaways and skills that you want your students to learn?
That's a good question as well. I think, first of all, in today's world, I do think also my personal experience, I think grit is very important. So which means, right, so you have to challenge yourself.
I love that word.
You have to learn how to fail. I think a lot of the students I know have so many high achievers here in the U.S., like 4-point GPA. Mm-hmm. I must be everything perfectly, right? I cannot fail. How can I fail, right? But I think everyone has to learn, even me. I, you know, had challenges. I fell, you know, yeah, multiple times during my, you know, whole life, right? But still, I'm, you know, that's another quality resident, right? That's very important as well. And also, I think leadership skills are critical. You do not need to be a leader to have a leadership skills. I think that will benefit you once you go to the career, you know. And finally, find a job that make you feel perceivable. But that's the career you're gonna carry on. Mm-hmm.
I love that. Like, I, yeah. No, yeah, I feel like so many people forget that the whole purpose of learning is just failing and learning from those failures and then just keep rising up and just keep going through it, and just finding like a way to just stay like
on top.
On top.
I mean, even just being here, it's super competitive. And I feel like there is that pressure where people are looking at other peers and they're like, how can I be just as good, if not better than that other person? And I think that's something people realize is like, you cannot compare yourself. You gotta make sure that even if you do fail, that you step up to the challenge and you make, you know, something more of yourself, something that's like standalone, I guess.
Exactly. So, you know, yeah, don't never, ever lose your confidence. I always tell my students, the admission for you to the UF proved you are the best, best of the best. Always believe yourself. Have that confidence, you know, no matter failure or success. Trust yourself. You will do wonderful things.
Yeah, I've also like talked with my friends about this because if such imposter syndrome over here, but yeah, because around us there's so many people who are just great at what they do, and sometimes like even I get insecure about like what's going on and how good my skills are here. And with my friends, like, we've just come to realize that everybody here is great, and most of these people have known what they want to do since they were young. Like, you had your parents to guide you into like journalism and advertising and all this, but other people don't. People don't have this kind of like just path for them. And I feel like a lot of people forget that and they just compare themselves to others and see, oh my God, this person knows this skill and I don't even know how to start that journey to learning that skill. So yeah, I feel like just like how you said, grit and perseverance and just patience and all this just really gets you through it.
Totally relate.
Good.
can we ask you, so we know you as Huan Chen, mm-hmm. in Weimar Hall. Mm-hmm. Who are you when you're at home? I mean, what are your hobbies?
That's wonderful. Yeah. Hobbies, right? Yeah. I love singing.
Ooh. Yeah. Ooh, karaoke.
Yeah, I actually have a singing app on my phone. Oh. But it's a Chinese singing, you know, app. And, you know, I sing at home, you know. That's a great way to release my stress.
Do you have any like social media profiles on the topic where you, you're singing in front of the camera that we may know about?
I sing. I post my, you know, yeah, songs there.
Okay.
But, yeah. But I don't want my students to follow
me. Yeah.
That's the world so, by myself. So, I don't want my students. I know my colleagues now. I don't. I am a, you know, singer there.
Give a little challenge. Give a little challenge to your students now to find you. Yeah. Like, how well can you research?
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Anything else personal that you would want to share?
Yeah, I also have two daughters. You know? Oh, yeah, awesome. Yeah, Flora and Fiona. I think, yeah.
That's so pretty. You know?
Yeah, I think like, yeah, one of my job personally is to inspire them, mm-hmm. you know, to see what their mom can do. You know?
Mm-hmm. Excellent. Well, thank you for spending time with us and inspiring us today.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. You inspire me as well. My students inspire me every day.
Aw, thank you.
Thank you.
The Communicator Podcast is a production of U.S. College of Journalism and Communications. This episode was produced by Jake Cuomo and Kaylee Pichardo. Thanks to our guest, Juan Chen, hosted by Matthew Abramson and featuring Jake Cuomo and Kaylee Pichardo. Special thanks to WUFT. Go Gators!
Go Gators!
Go Gators!